You're very on point with that. Three.
Oh, this is perfect. We're in harmony.
Okay, before we begin, plug anything you want. Tell us where we can find you, any projects that are out or that are coming up.
Okay, so personal social, Instagram, Yadira_Brown. The Vapor Caves is my band. Mr. Prince Corgi is my dog. Those all have an @ in front of them. And you can find all of those on the Twitter, X, whatever, and Facebook as well. Yeah, we got a bunch of stuff out, so I don't know how to list that out right now. We just dropped a remix with XL Middleton that's on Star Creature Records.
Shut the fuck up.
For Sacrifice. It's so good.
I'm already going to cry.
He's a genius.
And we just started. I can't. I have tears. I have a place where I was going to start crying. I was going to force it. Hollywood. But I wasn't going to. I can never force my emotions when I'm around you because you are a well of energy that is calm and serene, and it just draws it out of me. But I can't promise that I won't. I already feel a little reclamped. But let's go on.
Okay.
No, I know.
Let's
Don't
do
look
it.
In the eyes. Here, we'll do the interview like this. So, a breathing exercise.
Okay, we're gonna cry.
Box breathing. So when I first heard about you, wait. First of all, okay. When I first moved to Austin, like in 2005, 2006, I was hanging out with rap dudes, and like much hasn't changed. And like, I remember they were recording tracks and they were like, we need to get Yadira on this. And I was like, never heard that name before. Love the name. And I was like, who is this person? And there's like, you know, this room of like hardcore rap dudes who were like just singing your praises. And, you know, they were like, she was on Smoke and Old Dominion and like these other things. And I think like the very next week we were at a show and then you got on stage and you sang some songs. I was like, oh, I fucking get it. And so you're born and raised Austinite and you've been in the music scene. No.
Not born and raised in Austin, but my family's lived here since the 60s. So I've.
60s Austin hippies. Love the origin of that. Mm-hmm. It carries into DNA. Where were you?
That's
where were
true.
You born at?
I was born in Arizona, in Phoenix, Arizona.
This is just like when I found out that Boone was like, what was it? What did I find? It was something about like him being born, probably in New Mexico or some other shit like that.
He was born in Venezuela.
Yeah. Did a green card? Anyways, we shouldn't talk about that. Especially immigration's a hot topic right now. go back to our interview. We may have talked about that. So Arizona, very hot. North or south, like the desert area?
Phoenix, I think, is like sort of in the middle.
It's very hot there. So you're there.
Chill. It's very hot. It's not chill. It's dry heat though. It's not like here. It's not like humid heat.
Yeah. You still want to die in it. I do. Whenever I went.
I was really little. We lived there till I was like 5. We moved to LA. So I kind of spent my childhood in LA, and then my formative years here, like from middle school on. But I was coming to Austin like since I was a baby to visit family. And my mom and I went to the same high school. So it's like I do feel like I can claim
it. I think it counts, right? Like I grew up. Like, I moved around, you know, from San Marcos, where I was born, Utah, and then I was in Southern California also until middle school. I came to San Antonio middle school. So I was living in, like, Loma Linda and San Bernardino area, those two
places.
Really?
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, came here. And it is a whole other life. When you leave your elementary, then you come here for, like, a whole other...
God, it was a totally different world.
And then you're just like, you already hate yourself for being existing as a middle schooler, right? Like, that's... I mean, in my experience,
it was the worst possible time to move somewhere as a child. Yeah.
Trying to, like, figure things out and understand how humans act and, like, how to, you know, get in there with them. Mm-hmm. But we made it. And we're here.
That's
and
right.
We have so many things to talk about. So it's 2005, 2006, I hear about you. I see you perform for the first time and I'm like, wow, I can understand, what the power was here and the draw. You told me a really cool story about how you first got on stage a couple years ago. Could you tell us that? It had to do with, I think it was Babu or T-Double?
Babu.
It was Babu, mm-hmm. Right.
So I had met him through somebody I was dating, had like been hanging out, smoking some weed and singing some songs. So he like knew I could kind of sing. And I used to go to Hip Hop Hump Day religiously, which was every Wednesday night at the Mercury, which was on 6, which used to be the Parish, which isn't the Parish anymore. I don't know. It is like Bikinis or something like that now.
But
it was an improv hip hop weekly with a bunch of rappers and amazing musicians where I met D Madness. And just one evening the fellas were rapping and I was in front of the stage, and Babu just like looked at me and sort of like handed me the microphone. Like he was just like, "You want it?" And I was like, "Okay." And so I took it. And so I'm like pulling it in front of the monitor and singing like a little, ooh, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You're vibing.
Probably sucked. Salad. I don't know. Yeah. But like a bunch of people were turning around like on stage, like, who is that? Like,
yeah.
Where is that coming from?
You know, Hip Hop Hump Day was one of the reasons I moved to Austin. I remember talking to Nick Knack about this because I was like, you know, needed a hip hop scene. Austin's hip hop scene was thriving at that point. And, you know, what you just mentioned also about like, you know, somebody on stage handing the mic. I haven't gone to a lot of rap shows in a long time, or like, you know, I love what Bubz is doing with, you know, Rather Unique. I love what they're doing. Like that is, you know, very chill. And I could see them doing something like that nowadays, but I feel like I haven't watched that kind of community experience with shows in a long time. Like where somebody's like, hey, just come up here and like MC really fast. Or like just come here mm-hmm. and like sing this song with this really, unless it was pre-planned. Like again, very mm-hmm. improv, which is really cool and spoke to a lot of people's talents. And, you know, what do you do next as you're growing in that scene?
So, I mean, maybe I did like one other time where, you know, they invited me up and I like did some little freestyle, like vocalizing, but that led to D Madness and I writing a couple of songs. So D Madness Project was basically him on like three different instruments with like a sax player and like maybe some MCs every once in a while. And he and I wrote a couple tunes that was like added to his set. Mm-hmm. And so one of the Wednesday nights ended up being the after party for like a Wu-Tang set at Stubbs.
Yeah.
It was an early show because it was on a Wednesday. So it let out early. So like everyone came to Hip Hop Hump Day and D Madness was opening. And that was my first set ever.
Oh, wow.
Was like walking out on the stage and seeing like a pretty packed house because everyone came over for the after party and we did like three tunes and then he and I just, you know, played a couple shows together here and there. We ended up playing South By together that year. I want to say that was 2002.
Break this down.
D Madness is a multi-instrumentalist. I want to say you might know him from playing bass on a lot of projects. He's also a drummer. He's also a producer. He produces on ASR. He is a member of the Kill Tony band.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So that's, I want to say, you know, more people might know him from that currently because it's so popular, but he's been playing music in Austin and, you know, Dallas and China and all over the world for at least two decades.
Yeah. I mean, that was what, 2000?
2002.
2002.
Mm-hmm.
And when did y'all get into the project then? Because now I know what
So we did some D Madness Project songs. I moved around a little bit. He, you know, like I said, like went to China. He did a couple of tours with some other artists. I want to say, Florida, maybe. I don't know. We have to fact check these. I'll
production
give him a call later. But so I want to say around 2010. Okay, let me backtrack. We really started in 2001. I think we maybe started performing in 2002, but we became friends, started writing in 2001. So around 2010, 2011, he was back in town. We started hanging out. We started writing new stuff, and we decided to form Tenure.
Yes.
Based off of those initial first couple of tunes. But it was a little darker. It was a little harder. I was rapping a little bit, and it featured some harmony layers, background vocals. We had keys, we had bass, we had two guitar players. It was, you know, a pretty full project that played out a lot. We just started playing out like a lot.
Yeah. And you had opened for some of like
We got to open for some like really amazing artists. I feel like Austin was just, I don't know, it was a really good time for it. Austin was just small enough, but we opened for Shabazz Palaces, we opened for Talib Kweli, we opened for Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah.
Which, like, I can't even believe I get to say that in this lifetime, but yeah. It
feels like I'm going to cry again.
And we never released anything. We released one song on SoundCloud that was, you know, It was all right. I don't think it was any of our favorite tune. I think it was just the first one that we recorded and put it up. But that was like the SoundCloud era. Like streaming wasn't even a thing really. So, you know, you just put your stuff on SoundCloud and saw how many likes you could get, you know. That was kind of the way of like quantifying any reach before actually putting out a project. We played festivals. We did lots of shows in Houston. We did some traveling around, you know. And we actually recorded most of an album, but it has never been mixed or mastered or released.
Oh my God. So it's like a Prince situation where he has all these things in the vault. Like, will we ever hear them? Probably not from Prince, but maybe we'll get that eventually from y'all. Cause that was a phenomenal project. And, it came right after LAX had, disbanded. Right. And so this is also like to give people an idea, like we're going in the indie sleaze era. And I think like right when you and Tenure were together, y'all were coming kind of out of that indie sleaze era. But you and LAX were, you know, who was in that band again?
Andrew Collins from a band called At All Costs. That was a hardcore band. It was like pretty big band. And he, I think toward the, I don't want to say end because they're still performing, but like there was sort of a little break in their trajectory, and he started producing on Ableton, like some like electro pop. And he and Aaron actually were the first two members of LAX, just the two of them. So it would just be like the two of them vocalizing and, you know, running the set through like, you know, some analog gear and like an Ableton, like early version of Ableton. Yeah. And we had been like friends of each other for a while, and he asked me to feature on one of their tunes that just ended up feeling so good that we just decided, they asked me to be a part of the band, and we just started writing the second album. They had already released their first EP, the two of them, and then we just like went super hard writing and recording the AEP.
How were you processing like what your creative path was? Because I think that we've spoken about this, or even if I remember like watching you being apprehensive to own your power, being apprehensive to kind of step in to, I mean, maybe I'm just like pulling stuff out of the air that's not true, but if you want to, I don't know, expand on some of that. Because again, like you're
starting
in 2001 going.
I will say that like, you know, wanting to make music like one's whole life, right? Of course I wanted to make music or have been singing or whatever for a while, but there, I think that first initial couple of things I did with D really came from this like love of hip hop and like what was happening at the time, both with production and with lyricism, like made a huge impact on me like in my teenage years. And so kind of coming out of like the late 90s hip hop, trip hop, like, you know, all of those things, sampling and like super idolizing rappers, you know, and lyricism.
It was such a great era. Like also like neo jazz in the middle of that too.
Yes, everything, all of that fusion, right?
Right, yeah.
Badu, like, you know, all of these things that kind of end
poetry
up coming together.
Sorry.
Oh, no. There are rooms in the house. But anyway, so, but at the same time, like, being an 80s kid, I also grew up with, like, a lot of, like, pop, like, funk pop, like, new jack, like, all of those things, right? Like, we're pretty heavy in the influencing, and I think there was also like a little bit of like a poppy indie vibe from growing up in Austin.
Yeah.
So it's like there's all of these different things happening that like influence you and like develop this like love for music before you're even making it. And it's like, what am I going to do? What's like the interpretation of me musically when I am so in love with all of these things? And so I had a couple of projects that never really got off the ground with different people that were just straight up like singer songwriter. Like they would play guitar and I was writing catchy pop shit, but that wasn't really me either, you know? So like, I couldn't really fit in that world. And like when I was around it, I always felt super fucking awkward and weird, you know? It's like, that's just not me.
Yeah.
Cause I have all this other stuff too. Never really in the country realm. Sorry. Love some things, you know, it's just not the direction I was going to go. And so when LAX offered this, like, hey, want to write some, like, super poppy, dancey, like, sweaty indie sleaze vibes? I was yes, let's do that shit. And it came really easily in the way that, like, we worked together on those songs. I felt like it was just like, let's just go. This is so fun. And playing the shows was so fun. And I think at that time in Austin, too, like, there was such a cool, like, mix of everything in the local scene. And it always comes down to 7th and Red River.
Oh, for sure.
In every conversation about all these different genres that I've been a part of, like, sure, you can go to 6th Street and fucking party. But, like, if you want to go see some music, there's, like, these bars and places where, like, you can hear all kinds of different stuff on any given night of the week. Right. And, like, if you're cool and you're down and you, like, actually really give a shit, like, these people are all actually friends, too, and, like, know and love each other. Yeah. And so it was, like, this cool, like, I don't know.
That was an era, like, where I'd be, like, I got to go to a metal show, I got to go see my friend's DJ, and then I got to go to, like, tour, like, a rap show or, like, you know, like, something, like, singer-songwriter or whatever. And it was, like, 3 shows in one night that I had to hit, and, like, blah, 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 blah.
And that's totally normal.
Yeah, exactly
for,
that.
For most people.
And I think I remember, like, realizing that maybe towards the, like, you know, unfortunately, like, maybe towards the tail end and be like, damn, like, we really can go and hit up. I think that right now it almost kind of is getting back to that. I've definitely had a couple nights like that where I'm, like, doing different genres all in one night, but it certainly isn't the same. And but, you know, things kind of fall back into what they were, so maybe we'll get there. I think economically we're hitting the same place as the indie sleaze era. We're not gonna talk about that, though.
I don't go out because I am tired.
I like being at home. But
yeah, I think then I think toward maybe, you know, the end of the indie sleaze era, there was, like, a little bit more of experimental, like, jazz, hip-hop stuff sort of bubbling again. Mm-hmm. And that was really interesting. And the idea of doing, like, sort of just weird, I've always had this thing for just, like, kind of weird dark chords.
Yeah.
You know, strong femme voice in front of them. Right. So I think that was where the idea for Tenure was initially, like, okay, like, sort of Portishead-y, sort of, like, underground rap vibe, sort
Portishead,
of.
Who is, like, I mean, I know that Beth Gibbons and Portishead Project is entirely one of your major inspirations.
Mm-hmm. I stan. I am the Portishead stan. Which, none of you stand harder than me. No. Don't try it.
And then also, you know,
sorry, guys.
Like, Applied Pressure, and y'all did.
We did, which is also kind of sacrilegious, but we...
Y'all did a really good job. They did all of...
Very
special. Was it
Dummy?
Was it... Y'all did the entire Dummy album, or was it only, like, a couple
songs?
No,
we did songs off both, the first two albums.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was initially the DJ Shadow tribute that Applied Pressure did, and they invited us to join on the singy parts.
Yeah.
And that went off, and then we just, like, were like, let's pay tribute to a bunch of trip-hop artists, you know, because... Right. Nobody's done that yet, and people really appreciated it. It was cool.
Yeah. It gives us, you know, first of all, to catch Portishead, difficult. You know what I'm saying? Like, I luckily saw them once. I saw Beth Gibbons once at a Coachella, and I had to wait around forever. It was, but, you know, I also knew, I was like, I'm not going to ever probably see her ever again, maybe, you know, who knows? And I think at that point, they hadn't even done anything out in, like, so many years. Anyways, all this to say, great influence, and I think it very much matches the vibe. When you're talking about doing, like, you know, dark chords, you're a water sign.
Yes, I am. I'm a Scorpio.
And, you know, going to exploring the dark underworld.
And D is also a water sign. D Madness, he's a Pisces.
Oh, which is, like, also a hugely creative sign. I'm a Cancer. I just cry and make pies.
They're yummy. But, you know, yeah, you swim in the deep, dark ocean. And I think, you know, that's what led to it. The ASR sound, like, there's just so many things that were like, oh, this feels really different than anything else I'm hearing.
Is he
but like
ASR 10 or what is he?
Yes.
Really? Mm-hmm. I haven't seen one of those. He still hasn't. They don't make those anymore.
No, they don't. He takes very good care of his.
That's really cool.
Because, you know, there's only a couple people that really can work on them, too.
I tried for a little bit. Ginger, it's a very delicate machine. Mm-hmm. It's a very delicate machine. Mm-hmm. Essentially what we're looking at, one second, there's definitely an alternate timeline where you are a country singer.
Fuck.
I know, right? Kind of beach. Okay, first of all, if you were a country singer, right, what would your outfit look like?
Oh, man.
Well, let's start with the boots.
I mean, I think it would be, like, all black. I think
absolutely
it would still be all black.
Just, it would be.
You know. Yeah. However, like a fringe. Suede jacket, black suede jacket with the fringe. I would wear that now.
Yeah.
I want that now.
Well, that's very also Stevie Nicks.
Exactly.
Which
exactly. So it would be like witchy country.
Yeah. Okay, wait. Maybe let's not throw away the whole country pop thing.
Yeah,
do we still have so much time? Oh, witchy country. Well, I guess.
I need a producer. Find me a producer. No, I've actually done some country vocals on, you know, studio work, like friends' projects. Like, I can do it.
I can do it.
I can do it. But yeah, never.
Oh my God. Okay. So, but in between this time too, like, I mean, 2005 to that, yeah, hip hop punk days
yes.
to LAX, there was
some non-music time. So, okay. I moved to Portland for the boyfriend thing who was in Old Dominion. I was sort of in Old Dominion-ish during that time. I recorded with, some Old Dominion artists, obviously Smoke, Henry Osborne, was on some Living Legends mm-hmm. releases mm-hmm. as well during that era. So it was like I was recording and doing some things, but I think when we started to gravitate towards each other was when I had moved back here from Portland and I met the Assassin Dynasty folks from San Antonio.
Yeah.
Who were new in town, who were going to this music school that I went to called Media Tech. We all went to recording school there. It used to be in Arlen Studios, which is, you know, around right. Music Lane in South Congress. And so I met them there.
Also, you did some music with them, too, because
yes.
you did the vocals on this amazing track, which was sampled with Jill Scott. I'm just remembering it all right now. Mm-hmm. The Jill Scott mm-hmm. Heron. There was a, I can't remember the name of the track, but I think Taz was rapping, and it was a very sweet.
B-Girl.
It was called
B-Girl. And that's why it reached you.
Yeah.
Because you're B-Girl.
Yes. Remember, he threw away, then the verse you mentioned that he threw away your shoes, and I was like, don't ever throw away a B-Girl's shoes. Like, oh, my God. But it was a very, I don't know, can we even find that to this day? I would still.
I feel like it's out there somewhere.
It's probably on the YouTube somewhere, maybe a yeah. SoundCloud, maybe.
Yeah.
So you know, you're linking up, then now you're getting back into music, right? So.
Yeah. Yeah. I learned how to record myself also. So I got Pro Tools and, you know, that was that era of like, yeah. okay, I'm not going to like wait around for studio time and like, when can I afford it? Or when can I, you know, find someone who will be nice to me? I was like, I want to learn how to record myself. And, so that was that. It was like, we were in recording school together. They were working on some stuff for their records. I went in and did some vocals. So I got to actually record at Arlen the first time doing Assassin Dynasty stuff.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
What was it like learning how to record yourself?
Liberating.
Yeah?
Once I could actually get it to sound like something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
With like my little setup.
Right.
So liberating because... you know, I'm a bit of a perfectionist. I have a Virgo moon and also am like super embarrassed in my human form and in my capabilities. So typically I don't want to like, you know, sound bad in front of other people, which doesn't help when you're trying to record because sometimes you sound bad.
Yeah.
And you got to try it again, like do it a little better and be like a human about it. But it took me a while. So it was nice to be able to just like do it alone. Get my kind of understanding of that world. Also learn about the things that I liked about my voice and how to get there before I just, you know, walked into a studio and was like, please help me do this thing. I have no idea. You know, it gave
right.
me like a little bit of power over my own art that, you know.
Yeah. Whereas, like, you know, the reason why I'd ask you, like, what was that process like? Because people usually don't want to hear their recorded voices.
It honestly became such a stim. Like, it was so stimmy. It was like, oh, what? I can, like, repeat this until it's perfect and, like, just scratch this itch right now without any of the awkwardness, like, and it's totally in my hands. I can go as fast as I want. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have to politely ask someone to please start the track over. Like, I can just be like, bitch, do it better. Fucking click the mouse and, like, you know, whatever. Like, just get in that, like, weird part of my brain that, yeah, you know, is just, yeah, so stimmy and, like, makes you feel, like, hyper-focused. And, yeah, I love it more, yeah, than many things.
So really, people say, you know, like, find the thing that you love and let it kill you or whatever. And I never really understood that too much. Find the thing that you love and let it kill you. And I just never really under... I'm going to chew a man thought of it. But, like, find the thing that you love and let it love you back. Let it love you back, right? Mm-hmm. I'm speaking for myself now to receive love.
Don't love me. I love you.
I love you so much. Okay, so we're moving into, like... I mean, this... Again, this is, like... I don't mean to be pushing this down the line, but there's, like, you come in back from Portland, and then you learn how to record, and then you're in a band, you're doing extra vocals, you're doing backup, you know, LAX disbands, you're in Tenure, and then immediately, overlapping with Tenure, you get into Keeper.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And... But who had... the original member of LAX in that.
Yes.
And so, you know, how did Keeper?
So the singers from Tenure, myself, Aaron and Lainey, we formed Keeper, just sort of like, you know, it's hard to, there's sort of a different world between like a performing musician who is gigging like full time versus a project that is more like studio focused. And so Tenure, you know, while we did some recording, we were really gig focused. Like, we practiced sometimes, but mostly we were just gigging. And yeah, like, you know, if we had a new song, we would practice it. And then we just play songs out. And we just had like this, you know, like repertoire of songs, and we got some really good gigs. And I think that's kind of the climate of what was happening with Austin. And like I said, it was like the SoundCloud era. So there was no streaming. So the idea of like investing a ton of money into a release wasn't really possible. Even with my capability of recording vocals, I couldn't record a full band. I didn't have like a studio, you know, that was accessible at the time. And we were all either full-time gigging musicians or part-time gigging musicians with a full-time job. Like every single person in the band. Mm-hmm. So that was really hard. When we decided to do Keeper, it was like, we were three friends. We could record vocals in a home studio, and we were meeting producers who had like really, really interesting beats. So, you know, we were interested in kind of like developing that, but we started just writing to really basic drum loops or like garage band loops that we would find.
Yeah.
Or like I would just do like a couple of little, like a bass, like root note sort of plot out of chords. And then we would write over that. And one night we were approached by Lorenzo, who was working at Dub Academy. Mm-hmm. Benzo, you know, was running Dub Academy at the time, and he had this idea of marketing Dub Academy more to like producers and songwriters, not just DJs, because they were offering Ableton classes. So, you know, he had heard that I recorded myself, maybe because I was, you know, just talking about it a lot on the internet or whatever, and was like, what would, you know, would you guys want to maybe come in and do this, like, do some classes and meet a producer affiliated with Dub Academy and, you know, do a remix contest to like help us promote this new curriculum, mm-hmm. which was, we were like, fuck yeah. Of course we want to go take Ableton classes and like learn all this new stuff and, you know, work with some cool producers that we had been like fans of, but had never had the chance to work with before. So long story short, I wrote this song called Bad Doctor to a drum loop, and Ben's pitched it to Boom Baptist.
I'm smiling so much because I just had lunch with Benzo and he brought this story up.
See, like, I'm the one
that made
it happen. You know, yeah.
Because he was like, maybe I'll drop you up, just hang out. He's like, I would love to be a fly on the wall for this interview. And he just like adores you so much.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's just always on point. As a matter
of fact, he was like so instrumental in that even happening. So because we had that opportunity, we had to pick a band name, decide to be a group, figure out how to perform like without a band, like in this new context where all three of us were sharing the lead. So that was the point, was like in Tenure, I sang lead and they sang backup parts that I had written, like stacks, that and it sounded amazing, and they did a lot of heavy lifting, and we would even write in some little solo parts for them so that, you know, there would be a little bit like of an opportunity to kind of showcase them more. Mm-hmm. But with Keeper, we all wanted to do some lead parts, so the point was to kind of write stuff that could work with all of the voices, or like certain voices individually, and make sure that the other two could back up.
Yeah.
And I know it doesn't like seem that complicated, but
no, your harmonies were almost, I mean, the harmony, the part about Keeper, right? Like, I mean, besides the, again, Dark Chords production, mm-hmm. you know, very mm-hmm. siren-esque.
Well, so Aaron and I were, you know, singing together in LAX for a couple of years, and then the part, a thing that we skipped, so from the Assassin Dynasty beta player Parking era that came from that group as well. So Parking, Ibrahim and Nikki Luna were a hip hop group that opened for like Wu-Tang. I mean, so many, like, I mean,
yeah,
I'm sorry, I'm sort of like fumbling this, but like they did a lot of gigging as well at that, in that, that at that time. And, I featured on some of their stuff. So, where was I going with this?
Sorry, I feel like I sponsored this. I don't know if we can ever get monetized because of my personality, but maybe I will. Sorry. We're keeping all that in, though.
So you and Keeper, like, y'all harmonized really, really well. I remember being blown away. And again, we talk about how easy it is, but, you know, you were also in a project. Were they in the project with you with Parking and Beta Player?
So I sang with Parking at a couple of shows, and I would do some of my songs as well to open up. And so Lainey actually would harmonize with me on those. So she and I had been doing that. Aaron and I had been in LAX together, and then we were all in Tenure together. So we had, in some capacity, I'd been singing with either or both of them,
right,
for like a handful of years.
And Parking, who was Ibrahim and
Nikki Luna.
Mm-hmm. And then Beta Player was Pax and you, and who else?
Taz played drums.
That's right.
Alan was on bass.
Alan. Mm-hmm. Shout out.
Or guitar. Was
I love y'all.
Guitar. Yeah. It was a time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fun time. Beauty Bar was popping.
Beauty Bar.
Everybody
was playing at
Beauty Bar. The original. Were we the original Beauty Bar? Was it for LA the original Beauty Bar? Which one was it? Couldn't have been Austin as an original Beauty
Bar.
No,
I think it was Brooklyn. Brooklyn or San Francisco.
And Brooklyn's still open as Beauty Bar.
Maybe? I don't know.
Yeah. But anyhow, so you're working with them. Y'all come into Keeper. Where did the name Keeper come from?
Keeper was like, we were all just smoking some weed and trying to think of a band name. You know?
Love it.
Honestly, we were, we did some research on like the way certain words sound or feel in your mouth. Like, we read a bunch of stuff about sound and shapes of words, and I can't even cite like what we were looking at, but we just, you know,
like a Donnie Darko cellar door situation. Wasn't that like a similar, which is still, I love that.
It's not romantic. It's not cool. It wasn't like, oh, it was like associated with some special thing. Like, we honestly were just like,
was that y'all had been in so many bands and y'all are the, for keeps, right? Like, it's like, well, we've been together in all these different bands, but we're keeping each other like as in this next project. It's kind of,
I love
like,
that.
That's not what, yeah, that's what I, that's how I interpreted it.
Let's cool, go right? with that. Yeah. I'm, that's going to be my answer that's from now answer. On.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I get asked this in an interview.
Words.
Well,
words.
We had just been in so many bands.
The stemming thing also is that, like, you know, like the way the words.
That's what I'm talking about. I think, yeah, it was a little bit of like a, just a weird like brain thing where it was like, what would sound good and feel good and is concise.
It has a positive, because anything that's a keeper, you know, it's keeper.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
I like the key keeper also. Isn't that like a thing? That's like a word. People keep a key. That's
there like, was a little bit of like, you know, we have a responsibility and we're holding something and we're sharing it, whether it's energy or stories or our feelings or love. Like, we felt like we, there was a little bit of like, we're keeping this and taking care of it, like tending to it.
Groundskeeper.
Exactly.
Y'all did, what was the, yeah, name of the track that y'all...
It's called Bad Doctor, was the first track. And it was a remix contest sponsored by Dub Academy. And the prize was like a machine or like the new version of Complete or something, like some really cool thing that I didn't know much about, but everyone wanted it. And there was like, I mean, I want to say like 50 or 60 submissions, maybe more. So we all had to listen through all of them and pick like the top three, and there were these prize packages. I feel like Carrie might have won one of the I don't think he won first place, but maybe like third or something like that. But there were some really, really cool submissions. Juicy the Emissary won it, and he's like one of my favorite producers out of the Dallas area. He has done so many amazing things, but he has remixed some Vapor Cave stuff as well, and we hope to keep working with him. He's just like the best dude. Yeah. But yeah, he won it. He did this super jazzy, like very cool rendition of it. And the original, obviously, the original version that Boom Baptist produced was, I mean, just like so perfect. And I have this memory of being in the studio, because I had only heard my vocals on a drum loop, like a crappy drum loop that I made, and I can't make drums. And he took it, produced the song around it, and so we went into the studio to listen to it. And I just remember sitting there and being like, I couldn't even feel my body, you know what I mean? I was just like, like breathtaking, like this is how this song is supposed to sound. And I have worked with some really talented people and made some really cool stuff, but up until that point, nothing had ever just so perfectly felt like a match, you know?
Yeah.
And
Baptist, who we interviewed last year, and we did talk about, they're in Vapor Caves together, for those who don't know, but you know, who we did interview last year as well. And, you know, I mentioned something about in that interview about the way that he produces, the sonics that he has, and the way that he plays with sound and sound like off of each other. It's almost like the way that I describe it in my own perception of it. And also maybe because the first time I really heard one of his tracks, I was on like two hits of acid and I was laying on the ground and I like probably listened to it over and over on repeat. But I was like, it's almost like an audio hallucinatory, trippy kind of way that he produces and melds things together. And it really works out. So when we talk about these percussions, like, I don't know if I'm off point with however you're saying, but it definitely is like a carnival of sound that really works together and is very cohesive. But there's so many different intricacies in his production. Mm-hmm. Well, hold on. First of all, you did Bad Doctor, but then you also do Happy to Be Sad.
Right. So Happy to Be Sad was the first official single release. So Bad Doctor was like a SoundCloud thing. It was for the remix contest. And then Keeper, we released our first like official single, Happy to Be Sad, which was another song I had written to a GarageBand loop. And he produced. And that song ended up doing like some really big things. It was such a cool sound. Bad Doctor was a very like well-produced boom bap, like clean, nicely even, you know, spectrum of sound, like ear candy, like cute harmonies, concise little concept. I do a little rap part. It's about being, you know, brokenhearted. Great. Happy to Be Sad was a little bit more complicated or complex in what it was about, because it was about me falling in love and being like very afraid of what that could mean, but also deciding like the risk is worth the reward. So, you know, eventually this may end and I am happy for this to even to be a thing that had to end. Right.
Right.
And so there was that there, the harmonies themselves, like the way the song moved was a little bit different. And then his production was, like you said, like definitely went a little further out there.
Yeah.
You know, like was trippy, was like a little bit jazzier, was, you know, I don't know, just like a bigger sound. Mm-hmm.
This song was also on Broad City.
It did end up being on Broad City.
I think during the masturbation scene.
During a masturbation scene, a 45-second cold open with, like, nothing else happening, just, like, Alana getting ready to...
Very cool experience for y'all. And so this is where you and Boom Baptist meet, and you're working together, and, you know, during Dub Academy. And, you know, so actually, what is the journey from Happy to Be Sad to where you are now with Vapor Caves? And, you know, we can get on to the more of what's happening.
Well, there is like the personal life story and there's also the music life story. Boom Baptist ended up like DJing for a lot of Keeper's performances because we would need a DJ to run our set. And like we ended up doing every show with him, Yeah. Like, we did festivals and, you know, all kinds of stuff. Like, he supported us for, I want to say, like, 3 entire years of Keeper shows. Yeah.
Yeah, very much. Yeah. I remember when y'all started without him, and I remember what it was like pre-boom, mm-hmm. post-boom.
Right, because initially we would just kind of, like, get who we could get to help DJ.
Right.
And then he stepped in a couple of times and it went so well. He's so musical and he knows like how to do like these, like he just knew our songs well enough to like help us like medley them in the mix so we could do kind of like a, it would sound more like a DJ set. It wasn't like we were playing a song, stopping, chatting about it. It was, you know, kind of more in line with a lot of the DJs and producers and electronic artists that we were really interested in and like playing with. So, you know, yeah. That's how our set felt, which was great. Was really great, and he would even like jump on and do some like guest vocals and
yeah,
fun stuff. And you know, toward the end of Keeper, he and I had started making a couple of tunes just on the side. Like, he for Christmas one year gave me a new microphone and a hard drive full of like, you know, 30 beats. And was like, you just write. Like, I know this is what you want more than anything. And this was when Keeper was still pretty active, but I don't know that it was really, like, it had started to kind of maybe wind into a, you know, its closure. Mm-hmm. And wasn't really giving me the good feelings it had. And creatively, maybe I needed a little push, right? So he gave me this hard drive full of beats, and like half of them were hip hop beats and half of them were funk beats. And he had been kind of messing with like a little bit of like boogie and funk, and just not, maybe not really knowing where it was going to go, but just because he loves it. And I initially wrote one, like, again, sort of like boom bap, like, you know, lo-fi hip hop, if you will, mm-hmm. called I Miss You.
Great track.
Which, you know, we would kind of throw it in on some Boom Baptist sets. He would let me come up and like do a little
wonderful track,
grabbing yeah. of the mic, and then peace out. And then we started writing the boogie tracks, you know, and it was like different and really fun, because that was really the music of like my childhood yeah. in LA.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So it was like really easy mm-hmm. in a way, but also strange, because it was very sort of like genre specific, but not in the way that I had worked with dance music before. I want to say like it sort of took this very like roundabout way to get there. And we had actually both, once Keeper officially ended, I was like, you know what? I had a good run, you know, I really love music, but it just didn't happen for me. Like, I'm going to get a full-time job and just, like, put this away and, you know, started looking for a job. Mm-hmm. And MattFX, who did the sound for Broad City, who had worked with us with Happy to Be Sad, actually reached out to Andrew and I because season 3 was going to drop. And they needed some stuff. And he just asked if we had anything that he could pitch. And it was just the weirdest thing, because we just had a couple of tunes. And The Chase was the last one that we had written. And it was actually just kind of the weirdest one. Like, everything else was like a little bit more like in a room. And The Chase was like a little off center of that. But we sent him the handful of tracks we had, and within a week he told us it was going to be on the first episode. And it was like this weird thing that we didn't know was going to happen that made us feel like, okay, well, we have to release it now.
Yeah.
You know
yeah,
what I mean? Right. Like, we have to like become a band and
yeah,
you know, do all the things and release the song. We can't just like have a song on Broad City again and like not do anything, because with Happy to Be Sad, you know, like, that song still gets, like, 200,000 plays a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. For no reason. It just ended up on playlists. People liked it, and people still listen to it. It came out in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we knew there was going to be a ton of exposure, and we started releasing music, and that was the beginning of 2018, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so you do Feel Yourself, which Bird had mastered. Who mastered?
Bird mixed a bunch of it. It was mastered by Rob Murray. He's the best. He's the GOAT.
And also, I just want to say, I didn't shout this out, but Moon Doctor also did some Keeper production.
Oh, yeah. We skipped over that. He produced our first album, Top to Bottom, Moon High. Bird, who you just mentioned, Bird Peterson, produced Keeper's EP Corners of Top to Bottom as well. So those were the two producers other than Andrew, than Boom Baptist, that we worked with.
Follow them on socials, Bird Peterson amazing. And Moon Doctor.
I'm still great friends and my brothers, and I love them.
Yes. So you're in Vapor Caves from 2018 to present, and you release Feel Yourself. You'll take some time to go back into the studio, and then you come out with Dreams?
Yeah, Dreams was our first release post-Panini. We did that with Austin Boogie Crew, and funny enough, they really just wanted to release, they really wanted to release Bitch to the Boys, which was on our first album.
It's the music video that I choreographed.
Okay. Yes, so we did a cover of Bitch to the Boys by Shaq Attack, and we did a video, and it was amazing. And
so cute.
Yes, please go watch it. But
a lot of skits in there too. Very funny.
They were trying to work out doing a run of vinyl, I want to say it was going to be a 7-inch with Bitch to the Boys and another song. Bitch to the Boys didn't work out with on the licensing side. And so we created Dreams, and we got Jackie Venson to play on it, which she just murdered it. It's so good. Her parts are crazy. And yeah. And then we also wrote Either Way, which is the B-side for that release. And that ended up being a double single. We did two singles with Star Creature from Chicago. We did the covers. We did Messages from the Stars, and we did Knock You Out. Those did great. And then Sleepers just put out a double single 7-inch with Go My Own Way and Faith.
Yeah.
Yeah, this year.
Okay, so when was Faith? When was Faith just released?
Just a couple of months ago.
Okay,
yeah, in June and July.
And so now the XL Middleton project comes in. Also, by the way, just want to say this as well, because as a birthday gift, Boom had given. We were all together. We were on an island celebrating your birthday.
Oh God. Okay. Yeah.
And as a birthday present, Boom comes out. We have this huge sound system out there, and. He's like, I want to play this track. You know, I got it mastered, I think was his thing. He's like, I finally got it back from the studio. He plays the track. And?
Well, all of a sudden, the second verse happens. There's this little, breakdown part that's supposed to go into, B section to go back into the chorus. And I hear this voice rapping. And I'm like, I know this voice, from my entire life. What is happening? And he shows me the phone, and the song is labeled What For featuring B. And I'm like, it just takes me a second. And it's like the night of my birthday. We're in Isla Mujeres, Mexico, overlooking the ocean, sitting on the edge of a pool. It's just the best day of my life. And I'm 40 years old, and we're just there. And he does this, and my brain could not understand for a few seconds. I just what is happening?
Yeah.
And I realized that he had. So this is big news and very important, and I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a huge leak because people don't know about this, and we don't know when it's going to come out.
Oh. Well, we can cut that out. so you're in Vapor Caves, we do the music video, you release your singles that are coming out in the last 2 months. This is a CBD cigarette again. That's what I'm smoking, it's kind of weed. XL Middleton.
Yes, so Sacrifice, the song that we did for Project Traction with Jim Eno and Cam Franklin producing, that song came out last year, and we have done a slew of remixes with Star Creature Records, who did the Messages and Knock You Out covers with us. We got E-Live to remix it. We got Ken at Work to remix it.
E-Live.
E-Live.
Oh, E-Live. Okay. Yes.
And we got XL to do a remix of it. And all of those are actually going to go on a remix physical product vinyl record that's going to come out sometime soon. I don't have a date on that yet. I would plug it if I did, but it will be sometime very soon.
XL Middleton, who also has a Fleetwood Mac cover.
He's really incredible.
Did you get to like meet, or is it just like a back and forth kind of send you my stuff project?
XL?
Yeah.
Yeah, we just played a show with him in LA, with him and Monica. They're wonderful. And we actually played with them in 2019 here at the Sahara Lounge for the Austin Boogie Crew 5-year anniversary party. So we met back up in LA this year to do the 10-year anniversary party.
And now the next thing up for y'all, or you, is where you're working on a solo project.
I am.
Am I skipping anything over on
the No, I think that's pretty much it. I don't think, yeah, we've got the remixes coming out. Eventually we will put out a Vapor Caves sophomore album. So that is...
Being worked on.
We are also, sorry, one more Vapor Caves thing. We've been working on a tune with the Song Confessional, which is a podcast...
Tell me about this. I have not heard of Song Confessional. Tell us everything.
Song Confessional is really cool. So they set up these little confessional booths in different places, like whether it's like a hotel or a music festival or an event or whatever. And you can go in and anonymously record a confession about some tea, like some crazy thing in your life. And you don't, your name is never put out, you know, it's just like this thing happened and it's wild. And they, the Song Confessional team will go over them and they'll pitch certain concepts to bands or artists to write a song about it. So, you know, I mean, it can be anything, right?
Like
you could go in and say this wild thing happened to me. And then a year later, X band writes a song about it and puts it out, and they actually play the audio from the confession.
Oh my god, like it's a Midwest hardcore thing.
You know, or like a murder podcast or something. It's like a full, like you hear the whole story and then you hear the song that was created and inspired by it.
What a brilliant idea.
And it's put together by some local awesome folks. Walker Lukens, Jim Eno.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, Adam Mason. There's a couple of other people on the team, I think. But
I want to work with you. I need a job.
They're great. So, yeah.
Cut that out.
We did a song confessional tune. We wrote a song about a really wild concept.
Yeah.
And I don't want to spoil too much of it, but did you know that there's a website where you can put, like, really terrible dudes on blast who you've dated?
Yes.
Yes. I didn't know this. I had no idea.
Yeah.
It's called Sis, Is This Your Man? And it's like you put the photo and all the information about this person and what they did to you. And then other people will be like, yes, I am dating this dude right now. And he said the opposite thing or whatever. You know, it's just wild. It's so great. I love the internet for that.
Stop it. Men, quit it. We're so tired.
You
just need to
stop.
Could you not anymore?
Receipts are there.
Fucking so many.
They're public. just stop. But anyway, that's what that is. So that's going to come out on Valentine's Day. Yeah, February 14th, 2025. And I can't say any other dates about Vapor Cave stuff other than that. Hopefully lots more forever and ever. But I am putting together a solo EP. I don't have a release date for it, but I am making assets. I have some tunes mixed and mastered with some really cool producers. Butcher Bear.
Because you don't have a solo. You have some singles.
Couple singles.
But you don't have an album yet. This will be it.
This will be my first, you know, collection of songs released together.
Oh, my God.
Very stoked.
If it's done by summer, that should be the new Hot Girl Summer, which is like, I don't know, it'd be like just girl summer.
Oh, no, it's dark. And
yeah, that's what I'm saying. We don't need a pumpkin.
Do we need a dark witchy summer?
Yeah, we need a dark witchy summer. We need a witch girl summer.
Okay.
Which also, when I was looking at the interview questions today, I saw the tarot reading that you gave me in like March 19th, 2020, when I was supposed to move to Portland. Mm-hmm. And I was super confused about my life. Again, I'm there. And you wrote down this wish for every card that I got. Mm-hmm. And it's the same message, and it like resonates so much more today.
Oh, wow.
And it was very, you know, I want you to kind of tell us a little bit more about that part of your life, because it is very much a huge part of your life and who you are, and it also goes into your music as well. And, you know, I think that if anybody knows you, not only to know you as a songstress, but they also know you as a good witch.
Thank you. That makes me really happy. Thanks for saying that.
Of course.
I mean, I have always been really sensitive. So that's number one.
Right.
Whether it's to, like, just things I sense or energy, I've always just been really sensitive and always been very interested in that. My mom does some things of that nature as well. She is an energy worker. She does sound healing, has always done astrology and kind of, you know, been sensitive to energy as well. So sort of raised with that understanding and acceptance. And I started reading tarot when I was really young. So like 14, 15, something like that. Got the deck that I still use to this day and started reading. And I think, you know, it's just been like a way to get out of the way and let something come through me that someone else needs to hear. Because I feel like when I sit down to do a reading with somebody, I'm like, hey, this doesn't mean I know your life. I'm not a psychic. I'm not seeing like pictures of your bedroom or like what's going to happen in the future or whatever. Like, I don't see that. None of this has any, I don't personalize any of this. It's not through my lens. Mm-hmm. It's through the lens of the cards. And I'm just going to tell you what is coming through.
Yeah.
And of course that's through my lens because I'm me, right? And I'm a human brain that, you know, processes whatever, but I just get out of the way. Mm-hmm. And I think that something will come through for someone who wants to know, you mm-hmm. know. I think when you talk about Sonia, our friend, Vessel and Spirit, like the ethos that we have always shared is that a healer doesn't heal you. A healer helps you get to the place where you heal yourself. So where you tap into those energies and it's your lived experience that's actually doing the magic. It's not like all in me,
right,
you know,
right.
I'm just a way to get you there. And yeah. I think the cards, like whether I understood it or not, just were the excuse to get out of the way, to get my ego out of the way. And I can just tell you what the fuck they say without worrying about you hearing it from me. Right. So like if a card is saying something that is maybe a little challenging and like personal, I can just read the card to you instead of being like, hey, I'm telling you your life. I'm Yadira telling Nisa her life. You know,
right.
You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's not, nobody
yeah.
likes that.
Yeah.
Like that, that's, you're not going to be open to that. You
yeah.
know, where's my resume? Like,
right.
where are my credentials?
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean?
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
And I think that that ends up kind of being a weird thing when you go to someone for a reading. I think that sometimes when it's too much through the lens of the ego of the reader or practitioner, you know, that's when I'll become cynical because I'm like, is this real? Who are you?
Right, right.
But when there's almost like, I don't know, it's like almost just like a channel or like mm-hmm. you just, you know what I mean?
I
you
do,
kind
yeah.
of feel that clean message come through, mm-hmm. then you know it's for you. And that's what I want to provide with tarot. So I don't do the like, oh, I'm like pulling a card on Instagram and like I have a tarot page or like any of that. I have a couple people who will ask me for readings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, we do them and they're helpful. And that's all that matters.
You're having like almost like a therapist, like a non-objective, like an objective
yeah.
like third party, right?
Exactly.
Like that's coming in to say like,
non-attached.
Hey, yeah.
Yeah.
And I can, you know, help you interpret this. And I do want to kind of wrap this up on something that we've talked about in the last couple of years, as well as, you know, in being on the autistic spectrum
mm-hmm.
and me being neurodivergent and like, but like with your experience, how has that been in your journey of figuring that out finally?
I think it makes so much sense. Like in so many ways, which is obviously why I knew it was the truth when I knew it was the truth, like with every fiber of my being, even down to singing. I think I learned to sing and make music because I couldn't communicate with words or process language as quickly and as like socially adept as other kids. And I wasn't doing it like normally. So I learned how to make it pretty. And I learned how to express it or to identify it, you know, musically, and being hypersensitive and really like hearing music on a deeper level than other people kind of came along with that. Mm-hmm. And I think that has to do with Tarot, because for me, that's like a really natural way of being. Just get out of here. Like, get whoever you think Yadira is, whoever I think Yadira is, get out. That's what has to happen for me to sing the best and for me to read cards the best. Both. Mm-hmm. Both.
Right.
So it's very similar. And I do think that, you know, when I've talked to people on the spectrum or read about people on the spectrum having that feeling of like not feeling like themselves, like always waiting to feel like, oh, eventually I'm going to accept that this is who I am. Like, I'm a human and I'm going to stop thinking about it. You know, like, yeah, the synapses are going to stop firing off, right?
Yeah.
Nope. Like, still waiting around. It's been a couple of decades.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I do.
And then you're like, oh no, this is actually just how I am. And it's really different from all these other people and like the whole way society is set up to like be a successful person, you know? And then you're like, ah, oh, well, what am I supposed to do with that? You know?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And
so you mask. That's the answer to that question. You mask with all the things, right? And then you burn out from masking and you have to find a way to accept and live the truth. And I love you.
I love you so much.
You know, it's really hard. And honestly, like, I love getting out of there. And I love just making the sound. And I love, you know, stimming and recording my voice over and over, because I don't have to think about the way something feels on my leg or like the way air feels touching my face all the fucking time and like be distracted. And, you know, like it all goes away, you know, mm-hmm, when I get to do those things. So. Yeah.
My body even feels different. Like, if I'm mm-hmm dancing, you know, like, I will be in complete pain. Christina and I have talked, like, you know, after, like, I was like, I just feel like shit. I'm just going to fucking shoot myself in the head. And then, like, I'll get up and start mixing, and I'm dancing while I'm mixing, and I'm, like, a completely different person. But I'm myself.
And it's okay.
It's okay.
It's not like there's no question about it. It's just like, oh, this is it. Like, this is what I need, you know. But for so long, when you don't get to do that, it is really painful.
Yeah.
You know?
Masking is exhausting.
Yeah. Fuck masking.
Yeah. Yes. I'm going to talk about that with you on the way home.
Chapter 2 will be about masking.
I love you so much.
I love you too.
I am so happy that you finally got to sit down with us. And, you know, I haven't seen you in a couple months, and so I like, missed your face. I think that you're always loved you. I've always admired you ever since the moment I heard about you, ever since the moment I saw you. And I am just so happy that you're in my life, in my orbit, and that, you know, I just love you.